Let's pray together. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Friend, beloved God.
Friend, beloved God.
Saints of East and West. Great Masters. Jesus Christ. Babaji Krishna. Lahiri Mahashai.
Lahiri
Mahashai. Sri Paramahansa Yogananda. Blessed Mother.
Dear
David,
beloved Saint Francis,
lovingly we invoke your presence
into this space,
into my heart and mind.
O beloved Lord,
I love you. I thank you.
Help me to live this life
for you alone. Free my life from all obstacles. Give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Standing on the throne of my consciousness.
Om peace.
Peace.
Amen. Coming into this space together and putting our one mind on God, let's have Peony lead us in some chanting. Good morning, everyone. So nice to be here again. So nice to feel Mother's presence with us today, the day after her Mahasamadhi, the first day of February. It was kind of like a new beginning. And last week we started tuning into Mother, so we've been blessed with a whole Mother's Day week. I invite all of us to continue that practice. Keep Mother with us all day today, her spirit and her love. Find her in these words. This is the next reading from Quiet Talks with the Master. It's called Living the Lesson. You are just beginning to realize how difficult are my lessons. Their language is simple, and the thought seems plain and of easy understanding. But it is the daily living in the constant realization of their reality that the problem is found. Do not be discouraged when it seems utterly impossible to make these facts of my dynamic power an active ingredient in your life. Only by a more constant turning to me within will you be able to do this. Work steadily at it. Try each day to realize that I am, which means I am all power, all supply, all health, all joy, all sweetness, flowing constantly through and around you. You have many other lessons to learn, but none will be greater than this. Until this is perfected in your life, the others must lie hidden from you. Press on. There is much to do and much to learn, and the road is beautiful before you. And I'd like to share a special treat. This is an excerpt from the book that Kate is currently working on about Master and Mother. And this section is called The Perfume of Thy Presence. Stories and Memories. And this is all in Mother's words. You go to this teacher, you go to that teacher in the beginning, and you get a little bit of knowledge. Many go through curiosity. Many go just to be entertained. They go from one to the other all of the time, and they get inspired. Finally, they think God realization might be a pretty good thing to have. Now let me see. I don't want to do all of the things that they say is necessary in order to do that. I don't want to pay that kind of a price. There must be an easier way. So they keep going from one teacher to another, hoping that one day one of them will reach out and touch them on the shoulder with a magic wand and say, I give you God realization. I can assure you that isn't going to happen that way. Master used to compare these people to the people who went to listen to one food specialist after another, attended all of the lectures, and they would try that particular one advocated for a few days and then drop it. Pretty soon another one would come to town and they would go and listen to that one and they would try that. But they never stuck with anything. They went on and on till finally they thought they were really very well read about the subject, very learned, and well qualified themselves to teach. And many of them start out and they teach. And they start writing books. And so they, being in a state of total confusion, confuse everyone else. Master said,
these are the ones that spread confusion. And he said that people who went seeking one spiritual teacher after another, trying to get this pearl of great price for nothing, attain nothing but spiritual indigestion. Now it isn't that one person has a monopoly on truth, because truth is everywhere present, but you must stay with that one. When you have the good fortune to come before a master, you have reaped something which is the result of your past karma. It is a privilege which is so great that it is second to none in this universe. When I think of my master's infinite patience with me, when I went to him about all the things of the world, all of my personal troubles in the beginning, he looked into my heart, and he saw my heart was with God. Many are the experiences which come to the disciple when he finally meets the guru. Because when you meet a true guru, it means you have evolved to the point in your spiritual consciousness where you are ready to go the last mile toward God. And whether you make it in this incarnation or the next, the master takes you a tremendous way. He gives you many tests, many trials. These are done not for your punishment, but because the love in God in him for you is so great. Because he has but one desire, and that is to take you to the realization of that love, which can be found only within yourself. After Master's passing, so many of the disciples would say, "Well, Master said this, so this is absolutely gospel truth. This is the way he would have wanted it done." Somebody else came along and said, "Oh, but Master told me that this is the way he wanted it done." So there was great dissension. Undoubtedly, both spoke the truth. Sometimes it seems as though the saint contradicts himself, but in truth he never does. He is above karmic law. He is working at all times in accordance with God's direction. He does for each one who comes before him that which God directs him to do. What for? Not for his own benefit or edification, but to help the individual get rid of the barnacles of the ego, which have kept him in bondage for centuries and incarnations. He attempts to help him to become a free soul in God, to be able not to endure life, not to be a slave in bondage, but to really live life. It is said that Master has gone beyond the law, that the Master has gone beyond the law, and is therefore no longer subject to it, because he has paid the full price under it. I happened to pick up the book, The Master Said, which is an account of the various anecdotes of my own guru's life, and I found a very interesting little anecdote in there that told about one of the devotees who had started a false rumor about one of the other devotees. And it was a bad one. It ruined the person's reputation. It went all over Mount Washington. So it came to Master's attention. He was very upset about it. So what he did was sit down and, I imagine, think over what he was going to do. And then he started a rumor about the person that had started the rumor about the other person. He made it a good one. It went all over Mount Washington. And this devotee, who had been guilty of starting a rumor about someone else in the first place, came rushing in hot haste to Master and said, "Master, you must speak to so-and-so. They have done a terrible thing. They have started this story about me. It's absolutely false. It's gone all over. Nobody will speak to me. Everybody's angry with me. It's awful. You have to take care of it." The master looked at him and smiled and said, "I was the one who started the rumor. I did that because you had started a false rumor about someone else. And I did that to teach you a lesson so that you would know how it felt to do something like that to someone else." Now, you could say, did the master have the right to do this? I think he did. I thought so much, so that not long ago I employed it myself. When you come to this point where you love God more than you love yourself, then you must of necessity measure up first yourself. You've got to be willing to get rid of this little self. You've got to live a life of truth, of honesty, of honor, of humility, of chastity, of virtue, and all of these other things. That's a part of the necessary things on the path to God. I remember once when I was talking to my master, and I had been talking about what somebody else had done with regard to me, and I said, "But now let me tell you about me. It isn't fair to do one without the other." And he says, "Never mind. I forgive you all your sins." I heaved a deep sigh of relief. Believe me. You know, the commandments weren't put there for our punishment. They were put there for our protection. Because when we break the commandments of God, we don't punish anyone but ourselves. And then when we have to live with the consequences, and many times this hangs on to us in our consciousness for years and years, and we beat ourselves about it. But if you just ask God's forgiveness, it's wonderful. Last night when I was tuning into service today, I found that I went right back to service last week and where we ended. And sometimes I find I'm not quite ready to move on from a topic, and then I'm even compelled to put the topic back into words and in writing somehow, maybe to enhance the clarity of what we've discussed or to continue going deeper into it, because in truth none of these things are truly learned from one dialogue alone. And in this case, the topic that we arrived at last week was this ideal of surrender. And so last night when I sat down, I was surprised, because I had wondered, well, should we just listen to a mother talk tomorrow? That would be really special and it'd be a real treat for me. And as I started to go down the road of finding a way out of giving a talk, I opened my laptop up and I just started typing. And in the surrender of that moment, I titled this blog, "I Surrender." We're going to start here today in our topic. In the growing communion with our Christ, with the Christ in our own life, there is perhaps no more valuable experience than that of learning to truly surrender. Often and understandably, we have trouble relating positively to surrender. Am I supposed to just quit? Do I stop fighting for a cause simply because it has gotten difficult? Can I just stop showing up to work because I don't like it? What can possibly be respectable about surrendering? Obviously, such external notions of surrender carry not the same meaning as surrender on the way to ultimate ego transcendence. As an attitude of spiritual development, surrender is an inner unfoldment for how we relate to life from the inside out. As an attitude of spiritual development, surrender is an inner unfoldment for how to relate to life from the inside out. Far from waving a white flag on the battlefield, surrender as an inner process involves coming back into God's fold to make space for His will and not just our own whims and fancies. Intellectually, this can make sense enough if one is prepossessing even a small portion of faith in a higher power. And yet it is that we don't generally arrive at the deeper layers of God's revelation and truth until we are faced with the humiliation of our own inadequacy to realize them of our self-effort alone. This is why many saints of yore have emphasized suffering as a path to God. For in the suffering of this ego-selfhood lies a common means to realizing the helplessness we face as an ego-self on the path to total rebirth in the divine self of all. In my own life, surrender has come in waves at different times and in surprising ways. The first major wave was the realization that the mundane life of a 24-year-old establishing a comfortable career in finance, experiencing life in different cities, attending social events and happy hours, was not satisfying my deeper nature. In fact, it was pushing me to a point of crisis. Isn't there anything real in this world? Tirelessly, I searched for something to give meaning to life. As the old pursuits gradually and sometimes dramatically fell by the wayside. The critical moment of surrender came when I realized it was time to leave my job, something I had spent around 6 years building up through university, internships, training, and now as a certified 9-to-5er. I remember vividly stepping outside of the office to call my mom and tell her my predicament with all the resignation of one who has simply reached the end of the rope. My mom's response was more valuable than gold when she said, "Zachary, the most important thing is that you are happy. If this isn't it, I support you to keep searching. There is something else for you." And so I embarked on experimenting with the process of surrendering to that something else, though I did not know what. Surrendering a comfortable income from a work which was antithetical to my nature. Surrendering the need to figure out how I would survive in a big city so far from home. And the fear which this created in me. And most importantly, surrendering into a new kind of hope that there is something else waiting for me. The blind leap of faith brought about by surrender soon took the form of a move to Los Angeles for a fresh start. It continued in the form of new jobs, for which I mostly possessed no prior experience during an economic recession. I had every reason to doubt, and sometimes I did. What the heck am I doing? Yet, I was also experiencing, largely unbeknownst to myself, that surrender meant being open to every next step and leaning into each one with some kind of growing faith and confidence in life itself, without the security and benefit of knowing what would happen next. In the process, I found myself beginning to change. I was becoming simpler. I didn't spend extraneously. Enjoyments were centered in going to parks and spending time in nature, visiting local museums and hearing speakers share their inspiration. Eventually, the path of surrender led me to the Sierra Mountains for the first time, where employment soon arrived in the campgrounds of the National Forest. Here, life was totally transformed. From my confusion in a valley of worldliness and materialism, to a mountain peak of oneness with all life and nature, which had eluded me since childhood. No longer was the foundation of life built upon the rules and trends of the world. It was rather like viewing this world and God's creation from above, with fresh eyes and fresh inspiration for my own life. Life itself was the stars and constellations of the night sky, the sun rising each morning to greet the day, the calmness of a mountain meadow, the warmth of a warm fire, the prana of drinking water flowing in the creek, the midday rain which often blessed the mountain in the early afternoon. And at every step lay a new experience of surrender, surrendering old attachments to what I felt I must have to survive or be happy, surrendering the fear about what would happen if I didn't stay a part of the system which had given definition and direction to my life up until that point. Surrender to what anyone may think as I followed a star that couldn't be explained on the outside. At one point in the process, it seemed as if almost every friendship I had known with my peers had fallen away, which in itself was shocking from where I had come from only a couple years prior. Now the few friends around me were 65 plus years old, and I was 25. I remember wondering, will I ever have friends my age again? It didn't matter, because I was surrendered in God's hands, and it was truly wonderful. He gave me friends and guides, and exactly what I needed at every turn, even if not always what I would have chosen. Since that time, surrender has not stopped. This was the beginning, an inflection point to a new way of life. The grace which took me to the mountaintop through surrender soon took me off it after two mountain seasons. Waves of tears and sorrow wrecked me as I drove up Highway 99 in California, observing how we live as people with the eyes of one who had just arrived on Earth for the first time and is realizing that they will have to live in the midst of this strange condition called civilization. To leave that time and place of the Central Sierra in all the pristine glory of our Creator and re-enter a world which held no meaning for the sensitive heart which had been reignited in me. Another step in learning to surrender. Here I write this, nearly 17 years since leaving that job in the city by the bay and surrendering that direction in life which was no longer serving me. This last decade has taken me through tragedy and triumph, brought me into organization and cast me back out again, taken me before those who taught me by showing me what not to do, and brought me before my very own Satguru Dev. It has filled me with inspiration to do the will of God and struck me to the ground with no ability of my own to carry on. And yet, in all of this, the lesson of surrender remains an eternal constant. I may not be able to do it, but God can and will through me, if it be His will. Naught else matters. There is no end to the surrendered state, so long as we are still growing into the perfect knowing of our oneness with God. So long as there is still this little I, which has its own motivations and agenda for life, we will be met with an ever new need to cultivate surrender to the God inside, to ask Him, what do you think? How can I help? Will you guide me through this? All that I know is that I need you. I am lost without you, Lord. It can all sound a bit dramatic to the worldly mind, and especially to the mind of man in early Dwapara Yuga, set as it is on its course of ego empowerment and proving oneself in the world. Yet we have found time and again that all the wealth of the Rockefellers doesn't bring happiness, and all the fruit from the tree of knowledge eaten in one sitting doesn't make one wise. Must we aspire to accumulate it all for ourselves in order to learn the lesson? As we each exhaust all the various byways on the interstate of an ego-centered commute, and find that none of them, in and of themselves, have the happiness we seek, we arrive again and again and again at the doorstep of our dearly beloved Sister Surrender, not out of defeat, but in the realized victory of the soul, out of total freedom from the littleness of me and mine, and in total submission to the God in one and all. Far from being defeated, he fills us up with so much inspiration and joy. For how to live in this world, for how to help it, for how to be a good neighbor, for how to be a servant of his will, that far from being a terrible place, this world itself and everyone in it are he, and we are inspired anew to treat it that way. I certainly didn't expect to get emotional there, but I think the very ideal of Sister Surrender is a very powerful thought. No matter where we're at in our life, we can always turn to Sister, and that she's always there to help us find our next step. That it's really not very complicated at all. And actually, the inspiration that I felt so much for today was what happens on the other side of surrender. And for us to really be open to that. Because sometimes when we come up to that mountain or to that precipice and we have to make that leap, all we can feel is the fear of what it means for this ego self to do it. But what we know is that as we make that leap and as we step into this inflection point, this new way of life, that on the other side there is a constant stream and supply of inspiration and of joy. And it's our part that we come to fight this battle inside of ourselves of completely surrendering this little ideal. Yesterday I was talking with somebody at lunch after the Mahasamadhi service, and he was saying, isn't it interesting how Master prescribed the pandavas to the different chakras? And I said, well, of course, it makes total sense. It's the formula of all of life. And often if we just look around with eyes to see the pandavas, we realize them as the basic formula of our own life. And that each one in these energetic centers lives in the friendships of our life and lives inside of us as our own consciousness. And he said, well, isn't it interesting that Arjuna's the third center? And I said, interesting implies that we're intellectually analyzing this. It's not interesting so much as it just is what it is. And when we've gone through that completely, it's not interesting. It's just a basic understanding of revelation of life, that this is where Arjuna lives. And why is it that Arjuna is of the third chakra? It's amazing to contemplate his plight on the battlefield when so understandably, Arjuna does not want to go on. He doesn't want to fight his kin. He doesn't want to have to kill anyone. And this is in truth the battle we all have to come to and to win completely, because it says a lot about Arjuna's character that he wasn't willing to do it anymore of his little self. Really, what all of this means is that Arjuna had reached the point of spiritual development that he said, I'm not willing to fight anymore of my own volition. I can't take action anymore at all because I don't know what the truth is. And this is a point that we all arrive at, and we in truth arrive at it time and time again. And it's our own willingness to know, I don't really know what the truth of this is. So I hand it over to you, God, and you have to show me what is my part. Help me to know what is mine to do. And when Arjuna does this, Krishna doesn't say, Arjuna, good job, you can leave the battlefield now. He says, son, get up. I need you to fight for what's right. I need you to fight for what's true. And when Arjuna gets up to fight this time, he doesn't do it as himself. He does it as God's servant completely. He does it as one who knows, I cannot go on and do this of my own ego self anymore. That God, you have to pick me up now and show me exactly what to do and how to do it. And this is what it is to move through the third chakra. Now I say this is, you can call this interesting when we haven't gotten there yet. But when you've gone through it, it just simply is what it is. And it's fine. It's just the beginning is what it is. And as we go through that, we can move into the higher centers and a relationship to life that isn't predicated on the idea of myself anymore. What's truly remarkable about this process is that as we open up to this, to not relating even to ourselves as Arjuna, we are beyond that. We are God. We are the spirit of God's intelligence moving in us. As we start to understand this, as we start to receive this, there is a flow of inspiration that comes to us that becomes the river of life flowing within us and guiding everything that we do. Now, I'm not here to say that you make a leap from that pitiful state that Arjuna was in into that perfect realization overnight, because here ensues the battle of learning to be constantly surrendered. Because just about the time that inspiration comes into us and fills us up and gives us our next step is just about the time we step in to take credit for it ourselves. Look at the great lesson I just learned. Look at how wonderful it is what I've accomplished in God. But as long as this me and mine persists, that wants to step in any capacity, we still have to keep surrendering. And so for all of us, it's essential that we understand this and that we not resist that process and that we not feel bad about it. It doesn't mean when we come to the doorstep of Sister Surrender again that we've done something wrong. It means that it's time to go deeper into God. It's time to hand over more of ourself and to make more space so that God can fill us up even more completely with His understanding, with His compassion for this world, with His inspiration for our next steps and our positive direction in life. That at every turn, this becomes our sadhana and our spiritual practice. And in this way, surrender becomes a positive understanding of life itself. It's not something that we are afraid of or we're fighting to do, that we have to struggle to surrender and give the keys back to Dad, that we actually do it willingly because we know what happens if we don't do it. Like Mother said in the reading, that commandments weren't given to us out of oppression. They were given to us as basic guidelines of understanding that when we go outside of operating in this state of surrender, we have to face the repercussions. As we know that, as we understand this, it simply becomes our way, the way of life, the way of every great saint, to be surrendered to God in all things and in all ways. This is actually freedom. This is actually ananda, it's joy. And it only can happen inside of ourself, in our own true relationship and cultivation of that relationship with the God that lives inside of us. This is the glory that Mother brought so clearly into this Christian world that we live in, and even into the lineage of Master's teachings, where this is confused, where we think that saying yes means simply saying yes to someone else's ego. That's not what it means. It means surrendering and saying yes to God, to God's intelligence, and to work with those that we trust in our life, who come as the channels of God's intelligence that we know are true. We don't resist that anymore. We surrender to that. We feel good about this. We feel free in this. But this freedom doesn't belong to us. It is us. But it doesn't belong to this little me. And so in this, we find the most unbelievably dynamic pattern unfolding time and time and time again. Until in truth there needs be no thought of surrender, which is when we arrive at the place where God told Mother, "Your will is my will. You needn't ask any more." Now this is a very, very high bar. It is in truth the highest bar there is. But it's important that we recognize that that's exactly what we're setting our sights on. That's exactly where we're going. And to get there requires total humility, total chastity, total surrender, all the qualities that Mother stated in that reading, each and every one of those. But there are times when our surrender doesn't look dire at all. It only requires us to step back in to the positive direction God has already shown us, and to feel the incredible joy of picking up the shovel, of picking up the loppers, of picking up the hammer again, and getting back out there, getting in the game, and being about God's work. Because this life, as we said last week, it is God. And as we recognize that, we have every incentive to do everything He puts in our life, every moment, every day, every hour. And we find everything we need comes as a result of that exact relationship to life. There is nothing that we want of ourselves. There is nothing that we seek for ourselves anymore. And when a little desire bubbles up, He's there to meet it. Because we're not attached to it. And so in this we find such an amazing opportunity to recognize surrender as stepping into our own positive inspiration in life, not resisting that anymore. We've gone through this process, almost every one of us, in the last year. We continue to go through it. And I point out how for each person, it manifests so uniquely. And I can't help but to think of Catherine and her process right now, and that I hope she'll listen to this talk and to know how much we all are thinking of her as she's gone through her own process of surrender and very recently of arriving at embracing the inspiration of her own positive direction. And this is a wonderful thing. And you know what? On the outside, it doesn't look anything like my direction on the outside. But on the inside, It is one and the same. And so we all have to learn how to identify what surrender looks like on the inside of ourself, and not by comparing it to someone else, not by trying to define it based on what we've simply become attached to our idea of the path looking like, but instead realizing it as our own essential nature and relationship to life. This is what we step into. This is what we become. And so for each one of us, we have things in our life right now which not only ask for it, but demand that we go deeper into this relationship. Each one of you right now can tune into those things. Where are you called to surrender your idea of yourself to God? And there is nothing to stop you from doing it here and now, except if you want to keep control of this life for yourself. Otherwise, all the freedom, all the joy is yours right now to give it all to God and to feel that. We watched Christopher Robin this week, and there's so many tremendous one-liners from the Guru Poo. But the one that comes back to me time and time again is his perpetual reminders of nothing, of being nothing and doing nothing to Christopher Robin, as Christopher Robin has been swept up into the ways of the world and the stress of life and of trying to make it all happen. Pooh is there to actually hunt him down in London and to tell him, but Christopher, the solution lies in doing nothing. And Christopher says, nothing good comes from nothing, Pooh. And Pooh says, but I do nothing every day. And there's always something good that comes out of nothing, Christopher. And this is just another language and another relationship to this same idea of surrendering. And there was one quote that I wanted to share from it. It was subtle, and it came back to me, and I had to look it up. And Pooh said, don't underestimate the value of doing nothing, of just going along, listening to all the things you can't hear, and not bothering. So let us not bother. Let us trust in this life in God. Let us be surrendered to it. Another thing that came back to me as I was tuning into this last night was these words from David when it's in April of 2001 in his year of silence, and he writes, this life is a dedication to God, and in fumbling steps and in precise movements. He talks about giving himself completely to God. And I think in that we all see this in the fumbling steps and in the precise movements and how we ebb and we flow. And sometimes we trip over ourselves and we get back up and we surrender and we say, okay, God, I just fell on my face again. Just show me what the next thing is. And we get back up and we move back towards God. And in this life is a total dedication to God. And so in all of our masters, we see this process that has already been gone through and have completely been realized. And here we are to support each other in that completely each day. And that is my vow to each one of you, is that I can only do things with you and for you that relate to your own positive direction in life, and that always involves your own ability to surrender to God's will for your life. Anything outside of that, I have nothing to offer anymore. And this has been my own path in the last year of establishing a new way of being in myself with God. and a new understanding of who I am and what I'm supposed to do. And all of this requires perpetual surrender. I think I've somehow managed to use the word surrender a good 200 times in this talk. Let it be sown deeply into the inner self of each one of us. Let us remember it in every moment of high and low, of joy and despair. In surrender lies our own victory. Bhima, I'd like to ask if you have any song fit for the occasion.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bhima. Thank you, Peony, for the opening chant. You could take out the whole talk and those two songs would have done it all. I'd like to mention while we're all here the idea that has been coming up of on Saturday, February the 13th. It's Valentine's Day, and we had talked about maybe having a potluck or a lunch that day, and also thinking of it kind of as an album release for Bhima, who has new 26 songs. I think he made it 27. We got to do this fast, so it's just going to keep climbing for 2026. And he shared them with me a few days ago, and I've been listening to them continuously ever since. I think it'd be a wonderful opportunity for us to honor that contribution together with Bhima and have him play some songs for us, and to share with others that opportunity to be together. So if you're available, that'll be February the 14th, I think, Saturday. And while we're in this space together, let's take the opportunity to pray for all those in our lives and to see each one who God puts in our heart and our mind this morning, to see each one learning to surrender into His presence in their own life, into His guidance for them, and into His happiness and inspiration and positive directions He provides. Take a moment to visualize all of our soul friends in this direction. Seeing all these friends, seeing everyone in our life, and especially one another, all lifted up into this space of surrender. Let's pray together. Divine Mother,
Thou
art omnipresent.
Thou
art in all your children.
Manifest
your loving presence.
Manifest your loving presence.
In these bodies.
In these minds.
And in these souls. Space for questions or comments. No pressure. We do have a special day today, a continuation of Pian's birthday. She so graciously shared it with Mother's Mahasamadhi and almost made no mention of herself yesterday. So we can really celebrate her for breakfast today. and sledding tomorrow.
If you like catch yourself in the like caught in between in the moments of like not being able to surrender, do you have any like advice for like a mantra or like how to recenter yourself? Mm-hmm.
The first thing that comes to mind, and because it's the freshest, is the song that Bhima just played. You could almost call that the surrender song, because it's the whole spirit of the process we go through over and over again. Mm-hmm. But I think it can also just be really simple. And oftentimes when I find that maybe I've overstepped in a direction and haven't checked in inwardly, and I'm not totally clear about it, I just get back to telling God I love you. Mm. And that works for me, is just to say I love you. And then sometimes if I don't feel that quite right, I will start asking, Lord, have mercy. Mm. Yeah. But I think for each one of us, there's our own love language. Mm. For Sister Surrender, and to just really have fun with it and just like be fresh in the moment with it. Mm-hmm. And don't make it a mental process as much as just following the natural flow. If you've arrived at the stage of realizing it, that's a good sign. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we can go a long time before we realize how essential it is to come back to our sister. Mm-hmm. What's the name of it?
Surrender Song.
Okay.
I don't know how you knew.
Such a perfect morning this morning. Mm-hmm. Hearing the rain again just felt mm-hmm. so good.
Just want to say that your writing is encompasses and is the great truth from all the teachings. Mm-hmm. And thank you so much. Mm-hmm. It was all truth. Mm-hmm. And perfect. And I just feel it feels like all the masters are smiling.
I think even the writing last night was interesting for me because I didn't really want to do it. I thought I could just listen to Mother with everyone else and that would be fun. And then I followed the thread, and then even after I had written it, I found a little bit of insecurity come up in me about sharing some of the same stories that I've spoken of in the last months. And I actually asked Peony, like, is it going to be just redundant? Am I just repeating myself to say this again? And I kind of felt insecure about talking about what I, the beginning of my path. Mm-hmm. Like, I've just already done this. Why am I saying this again? And then as I asked the question to her in the way that she looked at me, I thought, we all need to keep remembering. Yeah. We all need to keep remembering. And God made me write about this again, so we realize this isn't a new lesson. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing that we're becoming masters of, and we need to keep doing this. We can't think we've already learned it.
Yeah.
So if that means telling the same... I'm the one sitting up here telling the same story again, so be it. If it's what comes back fresh, then it's there to be told. Mm-hmm. So it's there to be reminded. And for all of us, each one of you has that version mm-hmm. in your own life. And don't think that you've already learned the lesson. Mm-hmm. Go back to it time and time again. Those are the seeds of your own realization. Mm-hmm. Those are the seeds of God in your life. And it's not for us to abandon those seeds. It's for us to hold on to those as the most treasured mm-hmm. parts of our life, where we learn to fully turn to God and give Him everything. So don't think it's a tired old story. Mm-hmm. Your story too is the most important story mm-hmm. that there is. And those moments when we turn to God and we know, actually the continuation of that Arjuna as the third chakra that I shared from yesterday, was that I used the statement that it's not interesting when it's revelation. Mm-hmm. It's revelation.
Yeah.
It's not something to be pondered. Mm-hmm. It's the statement that was made back in exchange was like, well, to have the revelation, you have to actually have it. And I was like, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, this isn't a game. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that we just eat from the tree of knowledge and think we've learned. It's something we have to go deeper and deeper and deeper into to truly realize in every atom of our being. Mm-hmm. And I said I didn't use the word revelation because it was an intellectual exercise. Revelation means it came from God, not from you.
Mm-hmm. I've been in a few Catholic services lately for various purposes, and the words that you read, especially the ones that moved you to emotion, what came to me was from the Catholic service, the word of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And you're supposed to say something after that, like, thanks be to God or something.
Mm-hmm. They all say it together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's something about realizing these aspects of our spiritual development, these real like surrender and personalizing it. As you know, Francis married Lady Poverty,
mm-hmm.
and that was his most dearly beloved. And I think somehow realizing that it was Sister Surrender really gets me. That
mm-hmm.
she's my sister. She's my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
She's always there in me.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow that personalization has a lot of power rather than as an idea
mm-hmm.
alone.
Mm-hmm.